Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world.
Hello, my name is Diego Alfonso, and welcome to the Florida Aviation Network, broadcasting in the clear and in conjunction with PGTV, Comcast, and Bright House. Today, we're broadcasting on the campgrounds of Sun and Fun, located at the Lakeland Linder Regional Airport in Sony Lakeland, Florida. If you just join us, 2013 marks the 39th consecutive year of this fly-in expo air show, which happens to be the second largest in the world. Today, we're having some aviation personalities and aviation people that are somehow involved in either the manufacturing, training, or promoting aviation and aviation safety. And we have today a good friend, somebody that I know for quite a while, Tom Evans and Mary Jane from SIMCOM in Orlando, Florida. Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Diego. It's a pleasure to be
Mary
here.
Mary Jane.
Thank you.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tom, I guess the industry that you represent plays a very important part in the training world of aviators. Either at the beginning, during the middle, or at the end of their careers. They're probably, because I've been there many times and I still see people that are 60, 65 years old and they're still there training. So in your opinion, how would you weigh the difference between simulation or instruction in simulators versus the actual training?
I'm a big fan and always been a big fan of in-aircraft training. But I see extreme benefits in the use of simulators, especially when it comes to learning new procedures, learning systems, system abnormalities, emergencies and such, where you can practice in an environment where you don't have any outside stress to deal with. If you have problems with a particular procedure, you can stop, talk about it, revisit it. And I think that's probably the biggest reason why I'm such a strong proponent on simulation training, especially as we get into more advanced aircraft.
Now, on your end of the spectrum, what would you have to say about SIMCOM?
Well, I've been at SIMCOM for 23 years, so I've had an opportunity to meet all types of pilots from all over the world. It's very exciting. They're all training on different types of aircraft at different levels, and they enjoy coming into the classroom and having some time with the instructor one-on-one, then going into the simulator and practicing emergency procedures and in a safe environment.
Okay. And what is it that you do over there?
I'm the executive director for the customer relations departments for SIMCOM. And so I make sure that the customers all get there safely. We do a lot of the TSA for our non-U.S. citizens. We make sure that they are set up for the correct courses, have all their training materials. We kind of give them a little tour of the facility prior to their course so that they know where they're going and they have a point of contact right off the bat, so if there's anything they need at all, they know who to call.
Okay. In my book, your position, you're the POI. You're the point of impact.
Yes, that's true.
That's where everybody comes in first.
That is so
true. And does that. And I happen to know a lot about SIMCOM because, you know, my son works there part-time.
Yes.
And I was involved there, too, because I was an inspector just to last July when I retired. And I had the opportunity to go a lot to SIMCOM to some of the operators that we had oversight of, did the training there, and some of them did the check rise over there. And the thing I love about SIMCOM the most is like on the second floor at the end of the hallway over there where you put all those cakes and the muffins and the juice and all. That's the break room.
That's where the good stuff is.
I think that's
yes.
Probably the best place in the whole area. Now, Tom. when it comes to actually Eric Crump, which was here before you came, they're developing a program now, which is a radical change from what has been done before. I think they're integrating now their knowledge base and the practical base all in one, instead of just getting knowledge, and then take them to the airplane. And they feel that an on-hands thing from the very beginning is much better. Which brings me to the next question, which is the automation we have now. We have airplanes that literally fly themselves. And is that good or bad?
I think what we're seeing with the technology right now is fantastic. Some of the increased safety as far as aviation suites and autopilots and all the navigational equipment out there available. It's a great thing, but we see quite often pilots becoming way too complacent and a little bit more than what we would like to see, getting away from being able to hand fly an airplane if they needed to, being able to hand fly instrument approaches if needed. And that's, I think, a big part of what people do when they come back for recurrent training, is we try to get them back into their basic skill set, focusing on using all that technology. You want to be able to use it, but you just don't want to trust it to the point that it takes you somewhere that might not be good.
Exactly. It seems like when they get in an airplane and they punch that button, that is religious, somehow that's going to work forever. And that's not the case. We know with that stuff can really come back and hurt them. I've been an instructor for over 40 years, and I taught individuals that have purchased aircraft with all the things that they could put in the aircraft, including autopilot. And the way I came across that was, no, it says you're not going to use any of this stuff until you learn how to fly this airplane by hand. And even when I was flying, I would use the autopilot on cruise. But I'll do the departures and the arrivals, even the approaches, just to stay current. Because the day that now, if I'm hard pressed, if I'm kind of maybe a little tired or something, I will probably use it, but not as a crutch. I see people taking off and boom, boom, pushing the button, and let the airplane do its thing. So where do you see the training of pilots going with this new generation of technical advanced aircraft and all this new technology that we have today?
You mentioned that integrated approach that Eric had spoke about. You know, that's one thing that we feel really helps, especially on these more technical aircraft. You talk about it a little bit in the classroom, spend a couple hours, and then you go into the simulator and spend some time practicing on a practical aspect what you just discussed in the classroom the last couple hours. So to me the more technical we get and the more advanced we get with aviation systems and avionic suites, I think that approach is much more beneficial than a 2 or 3 day lecture and then go to the airplane or the simulator.
Okay, now do you get over there a lot of pinch hitter courses, like you know, sometimes husband and wife team, and the husband wants the wife to learn how to fly, you know, that type of thing. Is that something that is being promoted, or
we see more and more of that, and I think Mary Jane could probably explain it better than any.
On a weekly basis, I have a lot of non-pilot flying partners that are sitting in the right seat, very anxious, not enjoying their flights because they're concentrating on worrying about what will I do if the pilot becomes incapacitated, and they're really afraid. So I always encourage them to take a pinch hitter course, because it's so important. And what they don't realize is it is such a confidence builder, and it will change your whole flying experience, and you will actually start to enjoy those flights that you take. And I've had many come back and say, it's the best thing I have ever done. Now I feel a part of the airplane, I feel a part of the flying experience, and I don't sit and worry. And it's saved their relationship in some situations. And they're enjoying their flights now, which they should be doing.
As long as they know who's PIC.
Oh, yes.
Right,
yeah,
in the beginning. That's got to be that's got to be delineated there, right?
I,
there.
Tom Tomby, that one a long time ago.
You know, usually when guests come to the program, you're the one that's going to tell the stories. But since you brought this up, I got to tell you a story. And I'm kind of breaking the rule here of a professional interviewee or interviewer. My claim to fame as an instructor came when I had a student that I taught, private instrument, commercial, and multi-engine. He was not a commercial pilot. He was a wealthy individual, and he just wanted a twin-engine airplane. His wife passed. A few years went by, and I kept giving him every 6 months or 4 months, he would call me, and we'd go and do some training in the airplane. One day, he meets me. We used to meet for breakfast, and then we'd go fly. And there's a lady with him. And he said to me, Diego, here, I want you to meet so-and-so. And so it's my girlfriend, so we sat down. And then he goes and he pulls out a ring, a diamond ring, a rock about the size of this thing. And he shows this to her. And of course, he goes, you get this? When this man tells me that you can land my airplane.
What a great incentive.
Huh? Yeah, what an incentive.
But here's the thing. She didn't like to fly. That's why, I guess, that's my claim to fame. Because when you have a student that you call on the phone and you say, I think we're going to have to cancel today because of the weather, and the student goes, yes!
No. Not good.
You know, no. You have a problem. But I guess the moral of the story is that she did it, and we did it, and we went through it. And then they got married, and then she became the navigator. And she really enjoyed it. She learned the GPS. She will do everything. She was actually the best co-pilot he ever had. So these relationships change. Mm-hmm. And even though she didn't like to fly, I really think that the reason why she didn't is because she felt a little bit out of control. Yeah. But when you know what's happening, I think you feel better about being in an airplane. And I think that that pinch hitter course works. Yeah. It works for everybody. Not only husband and wife, but you know, anybody that has a stick buddy, that if you go somewhere flying, that person should know how to fly. But now let me ask you a personal question, kind of going back, and how did you get interested in aviation?
I was very fortunate. I grew up in a family where my father and grandfather both flew airplanes, never professionally, but my grandfather started flying in 1927, and my dad in the mid-50s, so by the time I was 5 or 6 years old, I was hanging around an airport with them, and fell in love with it. I soloed on my 16th birthday, got my private on my 17th, and took a liking to instructing, and coming up on 30 years teaching right now.
Wow.
as a flight instructor, and still love it.
Where did you learn to fly?
Detroit City Airport.
Oh,
born and raised in Detroit.
Yes, I've been there many times. Many, many, many times. And you got all your training there, or you did just the private there and then the rest of the training somewhere else?
I did most of my training in the Detroit area. Worked all the way up through airline transport pilot and all my flight instructor certificates. Flew corporately out of Southeast Michigan for quite a few years, instructing also. And then 1991, read an ad in Trade a Plane about this new little startup named Simcom, and down to Florida I went. And I met this Yale.
And the rest is history. The best co-pilot you ever had.
I was the one that placed that ad, by the way.
I remember the original Simcom that was, wasn't it off of...
Municipal Drive is where we...
Off of Kirkman.
Where
Kirkman,
we started.
Off
yep.
of Kirkman, yeah.
Yes.
Because my son used to live off of, when you get to Kirkman and then the big street before I-4.
International Drive and Sand Lake area.
No, before International Drive. Anyway, but I remember I used to go by there, and I had a lot of friends that worked there. Now, SINCOM has become a very busy training center. Can you tell us something about SINCOM?
Yeah, what's interesting, Diego, is SINCOM opened their doors in 89, and when I came in 91, we had two simulators. The company now, it was a 421 and a Navajo. The company now has over 56 simulators and flight training devices. We have four facilities in the United States, two in Orlando, one in Dallas, and one in Scottsdale, Arizona. And we train everything from high-performance piston engine singles up through multi, turboprop and piston, into the corporate-type business jets, and up even to several commuters now.
I personally seen the growth, because I said I remember when they were down there and off of Kirkman and the facilities. I haven't been to the other facilities. I've been to the ones here in Orlando, mm-hmm. both of them, and the one over there by Orange Blossom Trail, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's very impressive. It's very impressive over there.
It's been a wonderful ride. It's been a great company to work with.
Now, let me ask you something. Do you have any interesting stories about the connection here?
Well, a lot of people always say, how do you work with your husband? And for us, that hasn't been an issue. SINCOM has just been a passion for both of us, so we kind of work together on helping our customers, and so that's been a lot of fun to do that. We never run out of anything to talk about, ever.
Well, my wife and I are basically the same. We've always been together, and although she didn't want to, she kind of gave up on learning how to fly. Mm-hmm. I was flying for very early on for a company called Shadow Traffic. I don't know. You're original, I guess, from Detroit, I guess?
Yes, sir.
Well, this was in Jersey. There was a company that prior to these helicopters reporting traffic, and this gentleman came with the idea that all you need to be was a pilot. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you fly and you report the traffic not to the radio station, to a base. The base in turn sell the information to different radio stations. That's how this whole thing got started.
Interesting.
So I told Lourdes, I said, hey, I fly by myself, so 150. So we have to be airborne by 5:45. In the winter time, I think she took three lessons, and that's it. Then she said, no more for me. So now let me ask you this. Are there any plans in the works for SINCOM in the near future that you would like to let people know about?
We're continuing to grow. We're continuing to look into markets where another simulator would be a good choice. We're building a Citation Mustang right now in our Orlando production facility, and we'll have that up by the end of the year. Yeah, so that's our next big, big project that we're on.
Okay, well, Tom, we have come to that point in the interview where we're going to need to say goodbye, and I really, really enjoy tremendously you guys being here. It's been a pleasure talking
to
you.
Pleasure.
Wish you all the luck in the world with SINCOM.
Diego, thank you, sir.
I'll be seeing you there, and that co-pilot thing, it's really is going to work.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.